from the book of Isaiah, chapter 9, verse 2 and verses 6 through 7. Please listen for God's word to you today. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them a light has shined. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace for the throne of David and his kingdom. He will establish and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time onward and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. When I was 4 months pregnant with our son, Alex, my two daughters, Jennifer and Jessica, and I moved from California back to the town where Steve and I grew up here in Michigan. One of the first things that I did when we moved here was to find a pediatrician for the children. Indeed, I had delayed the girls' annual physicals that summer just so we could have an opportunity to get to know the new pediatrician before Alex was born. As we were sitting in the waiting room, waiting to meet the new doctor, waiting for the girls' physicals, the girls played with a plastic garden, and I read a magazine written specifically for parents living in the local community. It seemed a good opportunity to learn what kinds of activities were available for the children in our new home. In the magazine, I noticed an advertisement for immunization for infants against something called RSV. I was puzzled. I was an avid reader, at least of parenting books, and we had had an excellent pediatrician in California, yet I had never heard of RSV. After the pediatrician was finished checking over the girls, I inquired about the immunization for RSV. The pediatrician responded, well, we no longer do that immunization. It had some unfortunate side effects. Hearing this, I was rather concerned. The advertisement had specifically recommended the immunization for babies born in the winter months, and Alex's due date was December 31st. So I said to the pediatrician, I am not familiar with RSV. Both the girls were summer babies and were born in California. Can you tell me what it is and how I could recognize it? The pediatrician responded, RSV is a virus, which in children and adults is harmless, and rather like a really snotty cold, but which in newborns can be deadly. The extraordinary amount of mucus makes it difficult for the infants to nurse and to breathe. They often become dehydrated, and it can cause a sort of bronchial asthma, which makes it difficult for them to breathe, and unfortunately, very small infants do not respond to bronchial dilators. They have to be hospitalized. How would I know that he has it? I asked. In breathing, was the answer. I looked at her quizzically. The chest beneath the last rib pulls in when the baby breathes in. You'll be able to put your thumb into the dent. 6 months later, when Alex was not quite 6 weeks old, he was badly congested, and despite his normally very healthy appetite, he refused to nurse. And when I looked at his chest, there was a deep indentation beneath his last rib. When he breathed in, big enough to fit in my thumb. I wrapped him up, put him in a car seat, and drove to the pediatrician's office quickly. The pediatrician took a look at his ribs and disappeared from the room. When she returned 5 minutes later, she said, "The ER at University of Michigan is expecting you. It's RSV. Good call." At the ER, I sat in a chair and watched and prayed while the staff gave Alex breathing treatments, attempted to put in an IV, which he fought so valiantly that despite his tiny size, they sent in two male nurses to hold him down while they put it in. The staff asked if I wanted to leave the room. "No, thank you," I said. "I'll stay and watch." And of course, I continued to pray. When the nurse came into the ER to tell me that they would hospitalize Alex, she looked quizzically at me, and she asked, "Who are you?" I looked quizzically back. "Are you asking what I do?" "Yes." "Well, I'm trained as a minister." "I knew it," she said. "You don't act anything like a parent usually does in this situation. They're usually hysterical. You're calm, almost peaceful." "Well," I responded, "I cannot do anything to help my son. You all need to do that. All I can do right now is to pray." Today, we begin our journey through the season of Lent by lighting the first Advent candle on our Advent wreath, the candle symbolizing peace. Peace, according to the Webster Dictionary, is defined as freedom from disturbance, or as I believe it was Penny who shared with us, "They don't fight," or a state of tranquility. I find it interesting, therefore, that our symbols for peace came not out of times free from disturbance, nor out of times when people enjoyed tranquility, but rather came out of times that were quite the opposite. What we know as the peace sign, recognize this? Was first developed by a British artist and activist named Gerald Holtham in 1958. The emblem was based on two letters from a flagging system wherein the flags were used to communicate information at distances. The first form is where the two flags are held down like this, at angles. This form stands for the letter N. The second form is where one flag is held straight up and the other flag is held straight down. That form stands for the letter D. N-D. Nuclear disarmament. Holtham also said the design was personal, as it represented a person with hands outstretched in despair. The symbol was used in Britain to protest the making of nuclear weapons, and when it was brought to the United States, it was used for broader purposes in the civil rights movement and later as an anti-war symbol by those who opposed the Vietnam War. This iconic peace sign came out of a desperate need for peace in a time of fear and anxiety. So what about that peace sign, what our kids did for us this morning? It actually started out as a sign for victory, not peace. Resistance fighters in German-occupied territories used it as a symbol of strength during World War II, and then Winston Churchill, the British Prime Minister, adopted it to stand for English victory. And eventually, it came to stand for the end of the conflict in Europe. Later in the 1960s, it was adopted as an anti-war symbol by Americans opposed to war. This peace sign, too, came out of times of desperate need for peace. So what about this one? This symbol has been used by many traditions throughout history, but as a Christian symbol, it comes from the Old Testament in the account of Noah, who sent a dove in search of land after the great flood. The dove returned holding an olive branch, indicating that the waters were receding and that land was near. It was a sign of the promise of peace after the storm of God's judgment. None of our symbols for peace were born out of peace. each came about because of a desperate need for peace in the midst of conflict and war. On Christmas Eve, when we light candles and sing together, Silent Night, Holy Night, all is calm, all is bright. We conjure up calming, soothing, peaceful images of the night of Jesus' birth. But the truth is, the night of Jesus' birth was not really very silent. Indeed, the world at that time was not at peace. The land where Jesus was born was not at peace. There was a divide between God and people. There was division between people in Israel concerning how to deal with their Roman oppressors. There was military might imposed upon the people of Israel and most of the known world at the time by the Roman conquerors. There was the demanding physical journey imposed upon a pregnant Mary by Roman conquerors who ordered that a census be taken. There was unrest. Unrest in the hearts of many. The time that we live, in our time, the world is not much different from the world that Jesus stepped into 2,000 years ago. Although we are certainly far more technologically advanced, so that the scenery and the process of daily life look quite different, our world still struggles. There is still a divide between people and God, and people and people. We have computers, cell phones, and high-tech communication, yet social media seems to be replacing true community. And so many people today feel isolated and alone. Our world still struggles. There are still divisions within nations. Indeed, governments and politicians and even rioters in the street rage and clamor, and then their rantings are brought daily into the sanctum of our homes. Our world still struggles. There are still wars and violence, and they are amplified by our technological proficiency for killing. Did you know there were 614 mass shootings recorded in the United States in the year 2020? Our world still struggles. Through the pandemic, many people could not work at home, could work at home, but now we can't get away from work because work has come home. Our world still struggles. And we still struggle to cope. And with COVID, at times, we even struggle to exist. It would seem that our high-tech capabilities have, in many ways, increased our anxiety, our stress, and our fatigue with a relentless pace of life. So although we in this corner of the earth still have so much to be thankful for in our lives, in our community, and in our country, peace can and does easily get squeezed out of our lives so that we can feel overwhelmed by the storms and chaos of our world and of our personal lives. We feel overwhelmed by the storms and the chaos of our world and our personal lives, and we hold up our symbols. Pleading for peace. We yell at our adversaries, demanding assent so that we can experience peace. Occasionally, we even hate those who disagree with us and cause us discord, because we despair of ever achieving peace. We despair because we look in the wrong places for peace. We look for a world without disturbance. We look for a life filled with tranquility. We look outside ourselves, expecting to find peace. It is noteworthy that the Old English meaning for peace was used as a command to be silent. It is noteworthy because Jesus himself said to his disciples, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you, not as the world gives it." Jesus, our Prince of Peace, said this, yet he did not put an end to war. He did not put an end to the Roman occupation of Israel. He did not even put an end to the conflict over religion amongst his people of Israel. The Prince of Peace did not put an end to the storms and chaos of the world or of people's personal lives. What the Prince of Peace did do was offer to us a bridge between us and God, so that we are no longer separated from God, so that we can experience the peace of God. Jesus is not just the ultimate symbol of peace that we hold up in desperation. Jesus is peace. Peace between us and God. Peace embodied in human flesh, living in the world of storms, experiencing our lives of chaos, giving us peace within ourselves. When Alex was taken to a hospital room, the staff informed me that because there were so many infants hospitalized with RSV at that time, they had run out of magnetic anklets, which when put on the baby would set off an alarm if someone unauthorized tried to take the baby from the unit. Consequently, there was none for Alex. I would therefore have to remain with Alex in his room 24 hours a day during his time in the hospital. During that time, I sat in a chair next to his little bed watching the monitor that kept track of his breathing and his heart rate. Approximately every 2 hours, an alarm would go off on the monitor. Each time the alarm went off, a nurse came rushing into the room and started working on Alex until the alarm subsided. About the fifth or sixth time the alarm went off, a wizened elderly nurse sauntered in, looked at me and said, "Alex's breathing rate and heart rate are elevated. We need to get them down. Now, the best way to do this is to put him on your chest, over your heart, so that your body can regulate his body." So the nurse placed Alex on my shoulder across my chest right here. "Now you breathe deeply and stay calm," she said. As I breathed deeply and prayed, I listened to Alex breathe and watched the monitor. As I listened and watched, I heard Alex's breathing even out, and I watched Alex's heart rate slow down. And after a time, I realized that for every breath I took, Alex took two breaths, and every heartbeat of my heart, Alex's heart beat twice. We were in perfect harmony. When the nurse returned to check on Alex, I said to her, "Alex's breathing seems to match mine." and so does his heartbeat. It's like we're in sync. You are, she responded. You were in sync for 9 months. Your body set the pace for his body while he was inside of you. Now your body is setting the pace for him again so he can get well. Your heart is guiding his heart. Your breath is guiding his breath. He is following you. When we are caught up by the storms and chaos of life, and our breathing becomes elevated, our hearts race, our minds spin, our emotions flail, and sometimes our spirits fail. In these times, especially, God invites us to turn to him in prayer. And when we, like Job and like Jesus, are unrelenting in our communicating with God, pouring out our hearts, releasing everything troubling our minds, everything that distresses us, everything that causes us dis-ease, everything that tempts us to despair, expressing our pent-up emotions, letting go of the chaos of our souls. When we empty ourselves and we place ourselves in God's care, then Jesus sets our pace. Our hearts slow. Our minds become centered. Our emotions calm. And our spirits brighten. For Jesus brings us peace. Peace with God. Peace within ourselves. Peace that endures. God's peace. God's peace. That is that tranquility within us, even in the midst of the storms of life. God sent us Jesus as our Prince of Peace. Amen.